So this evening I was going to talk a little bit. It actually relates quite well to the meditation. You might have heard a phrase in there, a very similar phrase anyway, be here now. And this for me is sort of like, I often call it the coordinates, like a map reference for a happiness, but also for developing wisdom, for developing peace. Be here now. It sounds very simple, and it is actually quite simple, but as with many things that are simple, hard to do, hard to do. There was actually a book, some of you might remember, a book from the late 60s called Be Here Now. I was reminded of that today, actually. I was thinking of it. It was an interesting volume by Ram Dass, a famous American meditator. Sort of a bit of a hybrid between Hinduism, Buddhism, a bit of everything actually, but a very interesting volume called Be Here Now. And what it was pointing to is the fact that in life, I was thinking today, most of us don't tend to be here now, we tend to do there then. That's our lives, do there then, instead of being here now. Most of us are great doers, so the idea of just being like we are in meditation is quite difficult for us, just to be open to the present moment without a lot of expectations, desires, what we want to get out of the meditation, out of life, out of the conversation we're having with somebody, out of everything. So being is something that meditation teaches us, actually. And it's something we can cultivate, this sort of mind that hasn't got an agenda. And when the mind doesn't have an agenda, it can relax. It can be open to what it's experiencing, who we're with. It can be open to our own minds and to what's happening for us. Only too often we're so caught up with doing. We have to do, of course. Life is caught up with doing for sure. But we also have to stop sometimes and just be. You know, these experiences, I think everybody has them in life, when they're really in the moment, just being. There's nothing that they are expecting or wanting. You know, you might be just outside and feeling the breeze on your face, or the warmth of the day, or some sounds in the evening or in the afternoon, cicadas. That sort of thing. These moments when we're just being without a lot of wanting or wanting to get rid of. So this being is something we need to cultivate. And it leads, of course, when we're like this, it leads to peace. And it leads to a sense of happiness and to a sense of satisfaction. Usually when we're doing, we have a lot of idea of what the result we want, where we want to be, what we want to get out of this. And this desire, of course, it doesn't lead to a lot of peace. Sometimes we may get what we want, other times we won't. So this cultivating the state of being rather than the doing is something that's very useful for us. Unfortunately, I think most of us don't know the switch. We haven't found the switch to just be. And of course the switch for being, just being, is this what we talk about in Buddhism. You've heard of Ajahn Brahm mentions it a lot, is letting go. When we can let go of the past and the future like we do in meditation. This is an invitation to be, to just be here and to have no agendas, to be peaceful. So this letting be, of course, is letting go. People always say, how do you do letting go? And of course, you can't do letting go. This is one of the things Ajahn Brahm probably teaches us all, actually, is he often says, stop trying to meditate. You know, stop trying to do things. We just to be and to. Letting go usually occurs when we understand the situation. For instance, at the beginning of the meditation, we talk about letting go of the past and the future. How do you do that? It's really quite simple in the sense that once we understand, once we really take on board, yes, the past is gone. there's not a lot I can do about the past. I certainly can't rewrite the past. And when we realize that, we can put down the past. It has to come from wisdom, actually. But the same with the future, we realize, well, it hasn't happened. And whatever, however it will unfold, will definitely be different from what I expect. So we can let go of the future. So this is the way we let go, is through wisdom, through understanding. It is not through doing. It is through this wisdom power, which Ajahn Brahm often talks about. And I was going to talk a bit about here too, where here is. Here, of course, is, as I say, here in Dhammaloka Center, we are all here. But in meditation, the most important place for being in the here and now is inside. And there's a nice story that somebody already preempted, actually, just before the talk, about Nasruddin, that makes this point very well. Many of you might know of Nasruddin. He was a Sufi sage from the 13th century, lived in Turkey. And he was an interesting character because he was like a philosopher. But at the same time, people were never quite sure whether he was really wise because he did so many foolish things. But his excuse was he was actually mirroring the foolishness of other people, showing them what was really happening in their lives. But one evening, Nasruddin was outside his house, and he was at night, and it was the street light was on, and he was looking all around on the ground, fossicking here and there and turning things over and searching, looking. And then his neighbour, he noticed he was outside, so he came out and he said, "Nasruddin, what are you looking for?" And Nasruddin said, "I'm looking for the key to the house." And the neighbour said, "Oh, I can give you a hand. I'll give you a hand. And so the two of us, we'll find it in no time." So he's searching, and couldn't see it anywhere. So then the neighbour said to Nasruddin, as people do often say this sort of thing, "Do you know where you lost it?" I love that. People say that to me too, and I think, well, if I knew where I lost it, it wouldn't be lost. But Nasruddin, being Nasruddin, he knew where he'd lost it. And the neighbour said, "Well, where did you lose it?" And Nasruddin said, "Inside the house." And the neighbour said, "Why are you looking outside the house?" Nasruddin said, "The light's better here." So this is very typical of Nasruddin. But the key he was looking for, of course, is like the key for happiness or peace or wisdom. And where is he looking for this key, this peace, this happiness? Outside the body, outside the mind. He's looking for it in the world, where we all look for happiness and peace, for wisdom. And he's looking out, he's looking under the street light. The street light is like where the mind habitually goes, where our attention goes. But of course, inside the house is much more difficult to see. It's darker, as Nasruddin said. It's more difficult to see the mind, to see the states of mind that we're experiencing, to look at those, and to look, as it were, to the source, to go inside, where happiness and peace and wisdom are. Not out there in the world, where we often look for them, where we're often searching for them. But instead, if we look inside the house, I often liken this to like a movie projector. I think they still run on the same principle, actually, that we're often looking at the screen of life, and the screen, the images that we're actually projecting on life a lot of the time. What we make of life is the movie that we're projecting. And we watch the movie, we get involved with it, we get caught up with the characters, the dramas, the happy times and the sad times. And we enjoy it, we suffer, we're happy, we're unhappy. But how often do we look back to where that movie is coming from? Inside ourselves. This is where it is all happening, where it is all coming from. And to look, to follow the images back into our own minds, to see the sources of happiness, see the sources of unhappiness in ourselves. The Buddha said that the mind, our minds, are the forerunner of all things. This is where our universe is created, really. One of the first teachers that I had was senior monk who was here many years ago, Ajahn Jagro. I remember the first talk he gave that I heard, and he had this phrase, he'd say, that each of us is the centre of the universe, our own universe. But very often we don't realise that actually our experience of the world is coming from within us. And I mean, it's very obvious, actually, in a way. I mean, you just see it, for instance, with movies. You go to a movie and, you know, with a few people. I don't. and some will like it, some will dislike it. And, you know, the reactions will be varied, quite varied. And yet, same movie, same experience, and yet the reaction, totally different. So we realise... and we see this very often in our lives too. You can see sometimes people experiencing great happiness in a particular situation and other people just really miserable, experiencing difficulty and suffering. So we realize that the movie, as it were, is coming from within us, that we are projecting it, as it were, out into the world. So we are coloring the way we see the world. When I say that, I mean, some people will be thinking, well, I don't know about that. You know, there are difficult people in our lives, and there are also very nice people in our lives. And so when we're experiencing the world, how can it be just, you know, our projection? Well, it's interesting one of my teachers used to say, you know, that the things we experience in life outside of ourselves are like triggers, she called it, and she'd say, don't blame the trigger. These things are outside of us. These people, these situations, they are not, they are just triggering the response. Because if we didn't have inside us anger, if we didn't have inside us peace, wisdom, happiness, it would not be possible for these things, to arouse, they would not be able to arouse those experiences. They are coming from inside us. And it's an interesting thing. This is particularly obvious, you know, with something like when someone angers us, you know, they may say things, do things that we don't like, but the anger is coming from within us, is aroused within us. It's in us and coming out. This is another thing that one of my teachers would say. She'd say, what's inside comes out. And the Buddha really made quite an extreme case for this. He talked about the simile of the saw. You've probably heard this very famous simile of the saw. And he said, if bandits were sawing off our limbs with these two-handled saws, I've seen these in Sri Lanka, these vast saws, and have a man at one end, another man at the other end, sawing away at your limbs. And he said, if we were to develop a mind of ill will, of anger, we would not be practicing the teachings of the Buddha. When I first heard that, I thought that was really extreme. I thought, well, how is that possible? You know, if something like that is happening, someone is torturing us, someone is harming us, causing us a great deal of pain, how is it that we shouldn't be developing a mind of anger and ill will? Is it possible? It seemed impossible to me. But, of course, the Buddha is pointing to the fact that, as I was saying, the emotions that we experience are coming from within. They're not necessarily dictated to us from without. And someone who is fully enlightened, when an experience like that happens, their mind is not shaken by those. They will experience pain, of course, but not shaken by it. They can still be at peace in themselves. This is a very extreme case. I think the Buddha was trying to make the point very strongly. But it is the same for all of us, that whatever we experience in life, we can determine to a certain extent how we relate to that. This is where the situations in life, this is where we can bring our wisdom and our understanding to life. And not just be, because often I see people, you know, and we all do this from time to time, you know, feel a victim of life, like almost like someone is pressing our buttons, like the remote control. Someone's got a remote control. And we feel like they are manipulating us. And so we feel like victims of that situation. But in reality, the feelings that we have are within us. Yes, they may have been triggered by this experience, what somebody said and done, but we still have the potential for not reacting, for having mindfulness, so we know what's going on, what we're experiencing. We're not suppressing what we're experiencing. We know what's in the mind, what emotions are coming up. But we're choosing not to react, not to give back as good as we get. And there's a nice simile for that too, you know, that the Buddha mentioned that when someone is angry, it's like a person picking up a hot coal and throwing it at another person. The person that gets burnt first, of course, is the person who's angry. But if the person they're throwing the hot coal at is wise, they'll either duck or move and not accept the hot coal, not respond with anger to anger. So this is very important, to me, is a very important part of the spiritual life, because if we did not have that ability to choose our reactions, if we were all automatically reactions were triggered from outside, we would have no potential for change. We couldn't do any. We could not develop the spiritual life. We could not develop freedom of mind. And often, enlightenment is called liberation of the mind. You know, liberating the mind from the conditions that impinge on it, the conditions outside. So this is a very important part of being here, is this realizing that we have power within. We have choice within. But we only have choice when we're mindful. This is a phrase, mindfulness is a word we use often in Buddhism, a very important quality of mind, because mindfulness is this awareness in the present of what is happening. Because if we are aware in the present, then we know what's going on. Too often we don't really know what's going on. We're reacting habitually, automatically. But with mindfulness, we know what's going on, and we also know whether it's positive or negative, wholesome or unwholesome. So this mindfulness is very important, because then we have a choice. We don't have to react automatically the way we're conditioned. You know, if somebody says something negative to us, angry to us, we don't have to give back with anger and negativity. So it's very important. This mindfulness is really the keystone of Buddhism, actually, keystone of liberation, that it allows us to know what's going on. Because if we don't know what's going on, if we don't know what's happening in the moment, there is no way that we'll develop understanding of what's happening in our lives, happening in our minds, and happening in our bodies. No way that we will develop wisdom from that. I was going to mention another Nasruddin story that's very, it relates to not blaming the trigger, as I was talking about before, as it were, taking responsibility for ourselves. As usual, Nasruddin was blaming the trigger, but I'll tell you the story. One day, Nasruddin was walking down the street in his village, and he saw something glittering in the gutter, and he thought, what's this? And he bent down, and he picked up a metal mirror, and he thought, oh, somebody's thrown this away. And he looked at the mirror, He looked into the mirror and he thought, my goodness, this is ugly. This mirror is terrible. And he threw it down on the ground again. And then he said, I blame myself. I'm at fault. He said, I shouldn't have picked it up in the first place. Somebody obviously threw it away because it's a very ugly mirror. So we often do the same, actually, projecting, as I say, onto the outside world. And the other aspect I was going to talk about too of be here now, this was the here part of it. So we had the be, which as I said is usually do, here, which is usually there for us, and now is usually then. And often we just live, I've noticed this with myself, but I notice it's easier to notice with other people actually, how much we live for the future, how much we put all our hopes, anticipations into the future. It's interesting, if you notice your experience, look at experience, say, of eating, of many things, actually, but eating particularly. Half the enjoyment of eating is the anticipation. And it's true of life. Nearly everything that we experience, the anticipation, looking into the future, is the major enjoyment. And when we actually get to the experience, this is quite interesting actually, for instance with food, you know, we may be looking forward to a very nice meal, expensive restaurant, you know, very good, our favourite type of food. And then we go there with our friends and we just talk and we've ordered the food and you talk. Before you know it, you're eating and talking, not notice the food at all. So the anticipation was there for sure. But then when we actually got to the experience, we were not here. We were not there for it. We were chatting, we were elsewhere. It's interesting for monks, when we eat, we usually eat silently. So maybe this is the reason. So that we're actually there. And the interesting thing is, when you are in the present moment, experiences are usually much more, as it were, pleasurable. It can be more pleasurable being there because you're actually experiencing things rather than being distracted and having momentary experience of the taste, of the chewing, and the various aspects of eating. So the very important thing is this: not going into the future, actually. I mean, people would say, well, then I won't have all this anticipation. But we can actually have the experience of doing and being in the present moment, which is much more enjoyable. But this is quite interesting. This idea of going into the future, anticipating. I realized it in my life. I can see it in my life, and I see it in many people's lives. We're always, as it were, looking for a time, you know, when we will be able to, when things will come together, when they will be just right, when things will be peaceful, when we'll find happiness. And, you know, there are often, I can see in my life when I was young, you know, when I was little, which is quite a few years ago now, I thought, well, when I get bigger, you know, when I'm older, then, you know, I'll have more control, I'll be able to do what I want. And as I got older, I realized that wasn't the case. That didn't happen. And then, you know, when you go through school, for instance, you get to secondary school or university, then you have exams and you think, well, you know, I'll get through this exam and then, you know, there'll be some peace and, you know, there'll be some things will settle down. And of course, they do for a very short time. But then on again, and the goalposts keep moving, you know, and then, for instance, for many people, looking for a job, and people think, well, I'll get this job, the perfect job, and then everything will be good, everything will be okay, you know. And maybe they get the perfect job, maybe they don't. And there might be some satisfaction. But then things move on again, you know, and before they know it, the goalpost is somewhere else, a perfect relationship, You know, I want to get the perfect partner. And, you know, in life, often, you know, we'll meet, we may have a very good relationship and we think, wow, we're there, we've got it. You know, this is it. You know, I've finally come home, as it were. But that too changes over time, as I've seen in my life too. You know, good relationships change, and after a time, that too passes away and you move on. So in life, there's a sense of we're always living, as it were, for the future, for the time when things will be just as we wish them to be, to find that rest, to find that peace, that stillness. And as I say, it's a bit like these goalposts that are always moving. And I think one of the images that comes to my mind, I hear Ajahn Brahm use it a lot these days, is these moving walkways you see in airports. Ajahn Brahm, I think, comes across them quite a lot. And they're just continually moving. And our lives are like that. Our lives are continually moving. And this sense of trying to find a place of peace, of rest, of completion, resolution, never lasts. It's always moving. And I can say that even, you know, when one becomes a monk, for instance, you might think, or I did think, you know, when I become a monk, then, you know, everything will come together and, you know, I'll find this peace and stillness and wisdom. And you do, but it's not quite as you imagine. So the life is always moving. There's always this sense. In Buddhism, we call it impermanence, of course. But I quite like the instead to call it that nothing lasts. And I was recently in Melbourne with a Sri Lankan monk, many of you might know, Bhante Gunaratana. And he came up with a very good saying about this. He said, everything is permanently impermanent. And that's quite good, actually, because it does. It describes our lives, you know, that there's this continuous movement and this continuous searching for this happiness, for peace, for stillness, and for wisdom through all these various things outside there in the world. But in reality, the only place, the only time we can find that peace, that happiness, that stillness, is here in the present moment, wherever the present moment is. And really, when we keep searching for it in the future, we're delaying our happiness. We're actually waiting for, as it were, the impossible. Because a lot of this future that we're searching for is like this, we often feel, don't we, that it has to be perfect. You know, things have to be really perfect before we can rest, before, you know, it's just right. And I don't know about you, but perfection is not part of life that I've experienced. Life, you could say, is permanently imperfect. It's another way of saying it. So this sense of waiting for things to be perfect, usually that sort of stands in our way. We won't ever arrive at that perfection. We may get it momentarily and then it passes away very quickly. But the important part of living with impermanence is to realize, yes, that everything is impermanent. That as you've probably heard Ajahn Brahm's story, what's done is finished. You know, accepting that however things are at this moment, that's it. That's okay. Because if we can't do that, then we'll never rest. Then we'll never come to peace. Then we'll never come to wisdom. Because we'll always be on the go. We will always be going into the future. You know, once I finish this, then I can rest. Once that's out of the way, then I can rest. So this is a very important way for us to accept that whatever is done, whatever is finished, is whatever is done is finished. So just let things be. There was a very, Ajahn Brahm tells a story of a Thai monk And people came to his monastery, and they said, and he was building this big hall, and they went and had a look at the hall, and the roof wasn't on, and the windows were going in, and all this sort of thing. And they came and they said to the monk, "Well, you know, when will it be finished?" And he said, "It is." And he said, "When will it be done? When will it be finished?" And he said, it is done. What's done is finished. It's not complete. It's not perfect, but it's as it is at the moment." And that was his way of putting it aside for the time being, of allowing things to be as they are at that time. It was a range retreat, the time for meditation. So this was a good time for putting it aside. And this is the wisdom of living with imperfection. A very important aspect of life, and also to accept things as they are. This is one of the biggest problems of life, I think. I think the main problem of life is our attitude towards life, isn't it? That we tend to want life to be other than it is. We want it to be this way, not that way. And this is actually the center or the core of the Buddha's teaching, that life is just as it is at this present moment. It doesn't mean that we can't change it in the future. Of course we can. But however it is at this moment, it's arrived. And then if we can accept it, come to peace with that as it is at the moment, accept that what's incomplete is done for the time, is finished for the time. If we can do that, then we can come to peace with life. We can accept life as it is and develop wisdom about life. Because the fact that we don't understand life comes from the fact that we don't accept what's happening now. And if we don't accept what's happening now, we can't learn from it. We always want to interfere with it. We want to change it. But what's happening now is just happening. And it's arrived. So if we can be at peace with it, can let it be like we do in the meditation, then we can learn about our attitudes, about our minds, about situations, instead of rejecting them or running after them. These are the two things that push us around in life, aren't they? You know, this liking or wanting and the not liking, wanting to get rid of. These are the sort of the poles that push us around in life and stop us from being present in the present moment. Because if we don't want, we don't like what we're experiencing now, it gives us busyness. We've got to do something about it. We've got to change it. And of course, we can change things in life. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is what we're experiencing in the present moment. If it's arrived, if we are feeling upset, if we're feeling tired, hungry, bored, whatever, if we're experiencing that now, we just know that. We're aware of that. We can learn from our reactions. We can learn about our own minds and our own bodies. But if we're always trying to get rid of things, or we get caught up in things, there is no way that we will come to peace and be able to go more deeply into what we're experiencing. So very, very important that we can accept what we're experiencing in the present moment. And it's interesting, this is often, I think, one of the big difficulties for people, for myself and for people is, you know, for the present moment, often we don't look at it and think that very much of it. I know in life we're often looking, and in meditation too, we're often looking for very grand things, very big things, rather than the small things, the moment, you know, just of simple things happening. As I mentioned before, those moments like just with the breath coming in, going out, or the feeling of the wind on the body, or feelings in the body, just being present with those things. They're not big enough events. And it reminds me of another Nasruddin story I'll tell to finish off. Many of you might know this story. The Nasruddin, every day Nasruddin would load a donkey with some hay and he would take the donkey over the border. And the customs officers, they knew that Nasruddin was smuggling something. They just knew he must be, you know. He was going over the border every day. And so they'd search the parcels on the donkey, and, you know, they only find this hay and stuff, and they think, well, what is he smuggling? Every day he'd go over with a donkey and he'd come back later. And they just couldn't figure it out. They just wondered what he was up to, you know, because he seemed to be making money too. He seemed to be getting wealthier and well-heeled. And many years later, the customs men, once they'd retired, and Nasruddin was very, very wealthy and well off, they said, look, we know you were smuggling. Were you smuggling gold with the donkeys? If you were, where was the gold? And, you know, what were you smuggling all these years? You obviously made a lot of money out of it. And Nasruddin said to them, I was smuggling donkeys. But it's the same for us. We tend not to notice the present moment because it doesn't seem like a big deal, because we're not used to recognizing the present moment. Or we're used to, and this is a big thing in our society, a lot more stimulation. We want a lot more going on, as it were. We don't want to settle for donkeys. So the present moment where we can find small things, simple things, come to peace, come to develop wisdom. So this is like being here now, as I was saying, just being without an agenda, here inside the mind, looking inward rather than outward. We do that all the time, looking outward, looking inward for the source of peace, for happiness and wisdom. If they were not inside, there's no way we could define them, experience them. And the last thing was to be here now, in this present moment, rather than chasing the rainbows that we usually do, rather than chasing the goalposts moving all the time, to actually know that here, now, any moment, we can stop. We can find peace, we can be happy, we can let go of the past, let go of the future. So this is where, like a mantra really, be here now, rather than to do there then, rather than all our doing, we have to do, yep, for sure, we have to do. But we have to take time to be. And we have to take time to be here, wherever we are, with whoever we're with. Because that's one of the things too, isn't it? Often we're not with the people that we're around. That's quite interesting. It could be miles away, actually, thinking of what we're going to do in the future, what we did in the past. And also to be here now, in this present moment, and to find the happiness that lies within the present moment, the treasure. Just to finish off before we pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, just dedicate the merit, dedicate the energy of this evening, as I mentioned, to Ajahn Brahm for his birthday, and also to Dhammasara for their birthday, the King of Thailand, and Nolamara for the birthday of this hall, and for all beings. Usually we share this with the Devas, the heavenly beings, then with all beings, Buddhas, that have come into existence, and then with all beings everywhere, whatever type of existence they're in, animals or whatever. So if you want to join in, you're welcome to. Etavata chaamhehi sambhatang punya sampadang sambe deva anumodhantu sambha sampati siddhya etavata ca amhehi samvadang punya sampadang sambe bhuta anumodantu samva sampatti siddhiya etavata ca amhehi samvadang punya sampadang sambe satta anumodantu samba sampatti siddhiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Good. And now we can just finish off with paying respects to Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha.